A few axioms and observations. We live in a world of nations and always will. Let us defend this largest of merely mortal associations on the basis of which we can be stewards of the earth. Our nation is in the midst of a regime change. We are rapidly turning away from the politics of competence and toward the politics of innocence. Identity politics is the animating principle of this new regime. Unlike Marxism, which could never take hold in America because its master idea was class, identity politics has rapidly taken hold in America because its master idea is guilt. Christianity may be weak, but Christian guilt is strong. There are three pillars of American renewal: restoration of the middle class, a responsible account of and plan for thinking seriously about race in America, and a more modest foreign policy. The NatCon movement, well underway, is thinking seriously about the middle class and about U.S. foreign policy. We say nothing about race. Our silence invites the charge of racism on the left. The left is happy to own the issue of race and invokes it for the purpose of transforming, destroying, perhaps, America. We who are opposed to the left have important things to say about the two pillars of renewal, but nothing about the third. And yet we wonder why we have no full purchase yet of the American mind. We will not have it until we can find constructive ways to talk about race. Identity politics offers its own destructive account of these three pillars. First, the middle class is not worth defending because economics entails its destruction, because it is composed of deplorables, and because middle class life of ownership, for example, is too taxing on the planet. Let them rent bikes. Race is worth exploiting, second. It's the bludgeon that cripples America, her history, and her institutions. The left says to Black America, we have your backs. Vote for the Democratic Party. Now go to the back of the bus because other innocent victims, and now the transgendered, will don the crown of thorns you once wore during the Civil Rights Movement. Those of you caught up in generational suffering must remain where you are, as proof of the claim that America is systemically racist. Guilty white liberals and platoons of Black Americans will work together to keep you where you are. The former will plant BLM signs in their front yard and claim moral absolution while doing nothing. The latter will enlist in what Bob Woodson and others have called the race grievance industry, the government apparatus whose supposition it is that the state can be a substitute for the mediating institutions that the least among us, Black and white, most need, rather than merely an occasional supplement to them. Third, with respect to foreign policy, the left says it will now use soft power, pride flags at U.S. embassies. We will educate the global elites at universities who will go home woke and do our bidding. There are, after all, global norms. What the conservatives attempted to bring about, some kind of democracy, we will bring about not through force, but through shame and scapegoating. So says the identity politics left. NatCon has a better vision for the middle class and for foreign policy, but no yet fully developed vision with respect to race. If you want not only a national seat at the table, but a leadership role at the table, get the race issue right. If not, take a seat in the corner. I agree with many of my colleagues here on the panel that the issue of race has been amplified because it is a state-sponsored, convenience mechanisms like censuses, and that the memory of enslavement of one color of man by another has redounded through the generations to the detriment of both. Memory collides with our highest moral aspirations that race is but a biological fiction. We are moving toward a not quite racial society in which mild group attraction, call it a sociological weak force, remains but is no longer determinative. Perhaps we should refer to this not as liberalism fully achieved, but rather what I call just enough liberalism, wherein our group affiliation ceases to override the liberal commitment to equality of all citizens under the law, but remains present, more or less in the background. Here we may live with others who are, quote, like us, if we wish, but we're never forced to. The opposite of segregation is not integration, it is desegregation. Ponder the difference. We're not there yet. On the right, we're reconfiguring the relationship between libertarians and cultural conservatives, with cultural conservatives now having a veto power they heretofore have lacked. Whether these two nodal points of conservatism will help us really in thinking about the current state of America is very unclear. I don't think they can. Conservatives understand economic debt, this is the libertarians, and the debt we owe to our fathers, these are the cultural conservatives. But they can go no further. The issue of race in America pertains to a different form of debt. Let's call it spiritual debt, which is different than economic debt and the debt we owe our fathers. Identity politics suggests that that debt is unpayable, and that the only way for America to find absolution is to admit it is impure and, in effect, to start over on a new foundation. America must be fundamentally transformed if its stain cannot be washed away. Identity politics addresses race and all social problems through an American equivalent of a Chinese social credit system. Identity politics is less about the kinds you are than about the relationship between transgressors, currently white men, and innocents, currently all the rest. You do have an intersectional score. Go look it up. There is more. The transgressors must be purged in order for our polity to be healed. Identity politics, in a word, needs a scapegoat who will take away the sins of the world. This is a deep deformation of Christianity, which claims that Christ alone, the divine scapegoat, once and for all time, takes away the sins of the world. Christianity proposes that the line of demarcation between the innocent victim and the transgressor is a vertical one. Christ is innocent, man is a sinner, a transgressor. Identity politics proposes that the line of demarcation between innocent victim and transgressor is a horizontal one. Whites are transgressors, all the rest are innocents. Identity politics therefore rejects Matthew 17, and why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but not considereth the beam that is thine own? Identity politics proposes that all who are not white men, that they are innocent victims of a system that was set up against them. Identity politics therefore proposes that you are alone. Your friends, your family, and your churches cannot help you with your burdens. The problem is so big that only yet another state program can save you. You can see, I trust, that identity politics does immense harm. Identity politics declares that you are innocent and to be held of no account for your actions, which you, as a victim, do not author. Here is the bigotry of low expectations. Here is the justification for suspicion of competence and of merit, which are but covers for white power. Identity politics turns your attention away from the mediating institutions of family, church, and civic associations through which we achieve citizens' competence. Without robust mediating institutions, competent citizens wane, and the state must step in. This is a vicious cycle of cause and effect. Now, the state can supplement our mediating institutions, but it cannot substitute for them. Here's the catastrophe of the Great Society Program, which has produced a vast swath of black Americans, and not only black Americans, who are in receivership. There is more. As identity politics gathers more and more innocent victims to protect, it ends up undermining the institutions that the least among us, black or otherwise, need, namely our families and churches. Can it really be the case that in order for all of us to accept the transgendered, black Americans and the rest of us must confess to the crime of heteronormativity, to the belief that men are men and women are women? And the left argues that civil rights goes to women's rights, goes to gay and lesbian rights, goes to transgender rights. To honor that last group, we must sacrifice the institutions that black Americans affirm. What began as a civil rights campaign for black America ends with an assault on black American families and churches. Thinking about the fragility of some portions of black America helps us see clearly that Tocqueville's mediating institutions are the key to producing competent citizens, and even more important for those who are at risk. How then should we talk about race? First, no collective guilt. Collective obligation, not collective guilt. We discharge this obligation not by invoking systemic racism or by planting Black Lives Matter signs in our front yard. We discharge this obligation through the model that Bob Whitson put forward 4 decades ago. The competent Josephs in our most vulnerable communities, often invisible to the state, must be helped by the pharaohs of the community. The answer to the problems of communities are to be found in those communities. The identity politics left asks that we have empathy with the innocent victims. The right has nothing to say at all because black America is, I must say, almost invisible to the right. Between these, between sloppy empathy and the invisibility lies, I think, a third alternative, namely Christian sympathy. There is a need, a wound that is yet to be, there is indeed a wound that is yet to be filled, healed in America. We are on the way to making good on America's promissory note. The state cannot make good on that promise. Only citizens sympathetic to the suffering of the least among us can do this. They do this by finding the Josephs who understand that the nation of competent citizens can only be well-formed in and through the mediating institutions in which they dwell. Conservatives are right to talk about race, to shun talk about race that begins and ends with collective guilt. They are wrong to bypass collective responsibility, which point to the very Tocquevillian institutions we have long claimed to defend. Thank you.